The banishing of horses from our streets will be a blessing. Streets will be cleaner and accidents less frequent, for the horse is not so manageable as a mechanical vehicle. Modern life will have lost a few of its worst terrors.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is a mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, saying, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the newsworthy milestones we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, June 16th, 1946, we present the 31st in the distinguished NBC series, The National Hour. Our subject for today,
The Invisible Hitchhiker.
On the highways of America this afternoon are several million automobiles.
Beside each driver sits an invisible hitchhiker. And at the end of this day, the hitchhiker will collect his toll for travel.
Several hundred people injured, thousands of dollars of destruction, 35 lives lost.
Our subject for today is the story of the terror that travels on wheels.
The Invisible Hitchhiker.
This is Robert St. John in New York. Today's National Hour may not especially amuse or entertain, but it may save a life, perhaps yours. Here in this NBC studio are about 50 persons, our National Hour staff, musicians, technicians. It's a strange feeling to realize that for the next half hour, all 50 of us are safe from one special kind of death or injury. But the moment we ride down the elevators and go into the streets, we are pawning our lives in a cosmic hock shop because death is riding in an automobile to the beaches, the ballparks, the picnic grounds this Sunday afternoon.
This is Robert McCormick in Washington. Do you know that this year approximately 40,000 Americans will be killed by the automobile? That's the estimate of the Association of Casualty and Surety Executives. Many of these deaths will be caused by reckless green drivers, but many will be brought about by drivers who consider themselves skilled and experienced. And to find out just how good a driver the average experienced car owner really is, the National Hour will perform an actual road test. And then, to present to the people of America a program of action against death on the highways, we shall bring you Major General Philip B. Fleming, General Chairman of the President's Highway Safety Conference. We are standing by.
It's all ready for you, Mr. Cluckwin.
Oh, thanks, Georgie boy. Here, have a cigar.
Yeah, thanks.
I feel like a man just out of prison. Yes, sir.
No, I don't get it.
VJ Day, Georgie, when those Japs put the giant Hancock Shimas on the old dotted line, my accelerator foot began to itch like a mutt with the fleas. Now that we won this war, I can really do a little road burning.
Well, you better be careful, Mr. Cluckwin. Your car's 5 years older than when the war started.
So what?
Well, your tires are worn and your brakes aren't geared to high speed.
You're making a noise like a traffic cop.
I'm not kidding. Your car is in no condition to go 60.
60? Who said anything about 60? If I can't get this old roller skate up to 85, I'll swap it in for a mudscow.
All I'm trying to say is you're not used to high speeds anymore since the war. Your foot is lighter on the brake and your reflexes aren't as quick. And what about those kids on the streets?
What about them?
Well, they're not used to getting out of the way in a hurry. Lots of kids these days never even saw a car that was really speeding. They've been brought up during the gas rationing.
Look, pal, are you trying to tell me how to drive a jalopy? Why, I can handle this job at 80 lots easier than I can at 20. I never hit a kid in my life. Stop yelling boo at me.
Okay, Mr. Cluckwin. Guess I'll be getting back to work.
Always taking the fun out of life, some guys. What's he expect? Want me to crawl around on my knees? War's over, ain't it?
On the way out of town, Mr. Cluckwin turned on his car radio to his favorite station.
Attention car drivers. This is the month when children go back to school. Remember, the kiddies still have vacation on their minds. They're not expecting high speed. Be careful at crossings. Take it easy in rural districts. Be sure of your brakes and don't speed. Worn tires, faulty brakes, run-down roads, and rustiness in driving, all these spell danger. This announcement comes from your state motor vehicle department.
Mr. Cluckwin charged toward an intersection. The traffic light turned red. He slammed on his brakes.
Nothing wrong with them brakes. They'd stop a locomotive.
On the outskirts of town, a state trooper watched Mr. Cluckwin aim his radiator cap at a narrow slot between two cars and brake to a screeching stop at a road intersection. The trooper got off his motorcycle and walked over slowly.
Better take it easy, mister.
Did I break a law?
I'm not talking about that. I've got orders to issue warnings about careful driving.
Did I break a law?
No, sir.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. When I break a law, you can stop me and tell me about it. Give me a ticket, even. But, brother, I got rights just the same as anybody else. And I don't have to take nothing from no copper that feels like he wants to throw his weight around.
It's for your own good. Sorry you're taking it like that, mister.
Mr. Cluckwin drove on for a few miles. Several thousand feet down the road, he saw a group of boys coming from school. They were tossing a bundle of books back and forth like a football.
Those kids, they oughtn't to do that. Might get run over.
But Mr. Cluckwin did not blow his horn as he drew nearer, and the boys didn't see him.
I'll give them a little thrill. I'll teach them a lesson. A little scare will make them remember to be careful.
Mr. Cluckwin pressed down on the accelerator and drove toward them at a roaring speed. As he reached them, he blew his horn in a loud, continued wail. The boys jumped for the roadside, all except the one whose hands were in the air, ready to catch that flying bundle of books. His eyes popped with fear. Mr. Cluckwin pressed the brake pedal. The bands caught nicely, and he began to smile. Then a strange thing happened. The front of the car seemed to drop away from him. He heard the explosion of a bursting tire. The car twisted crazily and careened sideways toward the boy. It was terrifying. He could see the boy's open mouth, but he never heard the scream. On that afternoon in September, Mr. Cluckwin and a young boy became part of a national statistic.
On that September day, 109 men, women, and children were needlessly killed in automobile accidents.
And that day was added on to the toll for the year. At the end of the year 1945, the score read...
Killed, 28,500. Injured, 921,500. Cost in dollars, $1,450,000.
The automobile has cost America more lives than all the wars we fought, beginning with the French and Indian.
More Americans have been injured permanently than in both World War I and II.
As an insurance actuary, I've been dealing with these figures for years. Year by year, I know them by heart, but I'm still not used to it. It still spoils the taste of things when I remember that in 1913, there were 4,200 deaths brought by the automobile. That in 1941, there were 39,969. Or maybe for you, figures over 100 become scattered and meaningless. Well, then consider it this way. Each year, the automobile wipes out a number of people equal to the entire population of a city such as Quincy, Illinois, or Santa Monica, California, or Meriden, Connecticut. Or that each year it cripples the entire population of Jacksonville, Florida, Fort Wayne, Indiana, or Utica, New York.
Ease it over this way a little, Dave.
Got it.
That's right. A little more. 12.
Hurts me, Pinky. Hurts me bad.
You're still crying about these wrecked jalopies?
It's like working in a morgue. To me, a machine is like a person. It should be treated good. Shouldn't be smashed and scrambled like the crates they send to this junkyard.
You're right, brother.
Huh? What'd you say, Pinky?
Nothing. I didn't say a thing.
It's funny. I thought you said something.
You're from hunger, kid. You probably heard one of these crates talking. Oh, come on. Let's go and eat.
Okay.
I was a 1940 model. I guess it wasn't all her fault that she didn't really know how to drive. She happened to live in one of the seven states that don't examine drivers for a license. It was just as easy as buying a bottle of shampoo. She went into a drugstore.
Let me see now. Is there anything else I need? Talcum powder, vitamin pills, Castile soap, a hair net. I thought there was something else.
How about toothpaste, Miss Foster? We have a special on that item.
No, thank you. Not just now. Oh, I remember. I just bought an automobile. I need a license.
Yes, ma'am. I'll fill one out for you right away. That'll be 25 cents more.
She should have bought the toothpaste and called it a day. That license was the worst and last bargain Miss Foster ever made.
It's a little ironical about my driver. He wasn't directly responsible for that crash. But he might have done something to prevent it in the city council of which he was a member. His attitude there wasn't a very intelligent one.
Why, sure, I'm interested in highway safety. Why do you think I carry all this insurance? But we've got more important things to worry about here than to spend our time figuring out traffic laws. We'll get on it next year.
So there was no way, really, of blaming the other driver for high-boiling through the intersection and then finding his brakes didn't hold. It was murder.
And so death rode the highways. But for years, nothing much was done except to clear away the wreckage, bury the dead, tend to the injured. And then gropingly, out of the scattered legislation and the attitude, it can't be helped, there arose a concrete, positive plan of action. The plan of the three E's came into being.
Education.
Enforcement.
Engineering.
As a grade school teacher, I know that what education can accomplish in reducing traffic accidents has never been fully realized or accomplished. But in the last 10 years, school child traffic deaths have decreased over 50%, thanks largely to the work of the police traffic squads and our junior patrols.
About 8 years ago, a Delaware state trooper came to a decision. He had patrolled the roads for many years, and he'd seen the sons and daughters of his friends grow up and take to the highways. And much too often, he'd watched them get into trouble, which called for his official attention. Finally, he went to his chief.
We just get no place arresting people after they have accidents. Now, maybe it'd be smarter to get to them before they happen.
Well, I go along with you there pretty much, but just what do you have in mind beside a miracle?
Well, the kids, the youngsters in the high schools, they drive, lots of them. And they don't have the know-how. And they're the coming generation of drivers.
Well, the trouble is most of those kids pick up their driving from each other.
Well, you know, lots of them learn from their parents. But the parents could stand some lessons, too. Now, Chief, what I want to do is this. Bring lessons in driving right into the schools of this state.
You're biting off a big hunk. Think you can chew it?
Well, I'll need some help, all right. But it'll chew.
In 1939, the care and operation of the automobile became part of the high school curriculum in the state of Delaware. More and more schools included the course. Similar courses were instituted in other states. Due to the hamperings of war, only about 16% of the nation's schools at present offer courses in driver training, but the results of these courses are measurable.
I was somewhat skeptical at first. Naturally, since I am a high school principal, I was afraid it would be merely a distracting influence and that the students would not take it seriously. But they surprised me. They really work at it. The consideration for the other fellow, which is drilled into them as an essential to good driving, carries over and makes them more courteous and considerate all around.
I happen to be a dealer. I used to show people how to drive when I sold them cars. But I never could have taught my boy the way the school did. He can tell me about driving now, and sometimes he does.
Those of us on the school board were a little worried about the expense of this course.
But it costs no more than Latin or algebra, and somewhat less than chemistry. But no Latin nor algebra nor chemistry is any good whatsoever to the boy or girl whose life is lost in a smash-up trying to learn driving the hard way.
To demonstrate briefly but practically what those high school courses are accomplishing, we've asked Don Seaton, an instructor on the staff of the Center for Safety Education at New York University, to help us in a little experiment. At the present moment, he's in a car over on 8th Avenue, New York City. Driving the car is Lawrence Gray. Mr. Gray's been driving for 10 years, and he considers himself an experienced driver. Well, we don't question that. But as an experiment, Mr. Gray will drive and Instructor Seaton will observe. The object of the experiment is to find out just how correct a driver an average experienced driver is.
This is Dick Dudley speaking to you from a moving car right at the corner of 57th Street and 8th Avenue. It's a beautiful Sunday afternoon, and I've been driving around here with Larry Gray at the wheel, Tom Seaton over on his right, watching everything Larry does. I, myself, not being an expert at driving, think Larry's done a fine job, but let's have an expert tell you just what he's done. How has he been, Don?
He's been doing a very fine job. He's been staying in the proper lane and has been going at a safe speed and not honking his horn too much. He's made only one mistake so far that I've noticed, and that is that when he pulled from the curb back there, he failed to signal with his arm.
Uh-huh. Well, he probably forgot it. I'm sure that being an experienced driver of 10 years, that Larry knows you're supposed to put out his hand. Is that right, Larry? Did you know?
Yes.
I don't want to interfere with your driving here, so I won't talk to you anymore. Uh-oh, we're going to stop for a red light. Just come up. How was that? Did he do it all right?
I noticed another mistake there that is common to a good many drivers, and that is that he depressed his clutch before depressing the brake. This order should be reversed. When you're going to stop, you should step on the brake and then the clutch after the car has come to a jolting stop.
I see. Well, I'll remember that myself next time I'm driving around. Are there any other things you'd like to say about driving that he has carried on this afternoon, quickly?
Well, I've noticed that Larry is the type of fellow that has a proper attitude in driving. He hasn't been driving too fast, and he doesn't accuse all the other drivers of mistreating him and crowding him out and so forth and so on.
Well, righto, thank you, Mr. Seaton, for that good advice. And if any Sunday drivers are listening in on the radio this afternoon, we hope they take heed to your words. Now, we're going to call our little drive to a halt, so we return you to the National Hour.
Thank you, Mr. Gray and Mr. Seaton.
The trilogy Against Death by the Automobile, Education, Engineering, and Enforcement. None of the three or any two of them can stand alone in any traffic safety program. 30 years ago, there were no traffic engineers. Today, even though it has not yet been glamorized in a bestseller or in Hollywood, traffic engineering is one of our most useful professions. According to official definition,
traffic engineering deals with the planning and geometric design of streets, highways, and abutting lands, and with traffic thereon, as their use is related to the safe, convenient, and economic transportation of persons and goods.
Well, now, specifically, does your work have anything to do with traffic lights and signals?
Yes, it does. Investigations and installation of traffic control lights, markers, stanchions, safety islands, all the devices to make the flow of traffic smoother and safer. But our biggest and most essential job is to bring order and safety to the snarled, impenetrable, screeching traffic jungles of our big cities.
Education, engineering, enforcement. Enforcement is not only the matter of handing out tickets and fines. It's not only getting rid of the bribe-taking traffic cop or the political stooge traffic judge. It also means the scrapping and overhauling of useless laws and the passage of needed ones. It means traffic legislation that will be uniform from city to city, from state to state.
We came out of the war, and in the first months of peace, the rates of death and injury on the highways roared upward.
The nation's traffic deaths in April totaled 2,650, or 47% more than in the same month last year.
The total of 10,770 fatalities for the first 4 months of 1946 was only 1% less than the four-month period in 1941, a year which set an all-time high with 39,969 deaths.
But death this year rides harder on the highways, for although there are many thousands fewer cars in operation than there were in 41, the cars are older and more worn, the tires are thinner, the drivers and the pedestrians less accustomed and able to cope with speed. The figures for death go up with each tick of the clock.
Let's consider one day last month, Memorial Day.
The toll was 58 more than for the same holiday last year. 78 persons were killed in traffic accidents compared with 20 last year. Death and injury with each tick of the clock.
Now let's consider one small period of time, the 12 hours that have just passed. Let's mark death and injury by the automobile as registered in seven cities across the land. Representatives of NBC in those seven cities have been standing by at the police headquarters to which the reports have been coming. We shall now call in those cities. Come in, Cleveland, Ohio.
This is NBC in Cleveland reporting 10 auto accidents in the past 12 hours, injuring 8 persons and seriously injuring 2. That is the accident toll in 12 hours on the streets of Cleveland.
This is NBC Chicago. Chicago police reports for the past 12 hours record 53 auto accidents with 27 injured. There were no fatalities. That is the accident toll within 12 hours on the city streets of Chicago.
This is NBC in Denver. City police reports for the past 12 hours record 4 auto accidents with 2 injured, none critically injured, and none killed. That is the accident toll within 12 hours on the city streets of Denver.
This is NBC Hollywood. Los Angeles police reports for the past 12 hours record 30 auto accidents with 22 injured, 11 seriously. There were no traffic deaths. That is the accident toll within 12 hours on the city streets of Los Angeles.
This is NBC in San Francisco. Local police reports for the past 12 hours record 14 auto accidents in which 7 persons were injured, 3 of them seriously. And that is the accident toll within 12 hours on the city streets of San Francisco.
Record a total of 13 automobile accidents, 5 persons injured, and no persons killed. That is the accident toll within the past 12 hours on the city streets of Washington.
This is NBC New York. Police reports in the past 12 hours record a total of 15 automobile accidents with 15 persons injured and none killed. That is the accident toll within the past 12 hours on the city streets of New York.
The grisly roundup is completed. In 12 hours in 7 cities across the nation, there were reported 110 injuries, no deaths, by the automobile.
We have heard the partial score for death in one 12-hour period of one day of this year of the great automobile drought.
But what will happen with 2 or 3 million more cars on the road each year? What will happen if within the next 5 years we reach the all-time high of 60 million cars on the roads of America?
To meet this tremendous threat of peacetime, the president here in Washington called a highway safety conference last month, the first such conference in our history. The conference was called at a time of serious international tension and domestic crisis. But from all the states in the Union, there came 1,500 delegates, local and state officials, the civic, business, and political leadership of the nation. And out of that 3-day conference came a framework for traffic safety, a program for every city and state. For the highlights of this master blueprint of the war against death by the automobile, we bring you now from our Washington studios the General Chairman of the President's Highway Safety Conference, Major General Philip B. Fleming.
At the President's Highway Safety Conference, delegates from every state drafted an action program to combat the traffic toll. They returned to their homes pledging all-out efforts to reduce the death rate. Among the official report of the National Safety Council, showing that traffic deaths to April 30th exceed 10,000. As we face this grim situation, it is gratifying to learn that 16 states are now actively organizing state safety conferences which will follow the pattern of the Washington meeting. As state safety conferences convene, if the recommendations included in the action program find full approval and are put into effect at state level, I have no doubt we shall soon find the traffic death rate falling off sharply. The program formulated by the President's Highway Safety Conference urges greater uniformity in traffic laws and enforcement measures. It recommends a continuing nationwide program of public education. I have every hope for a better future. I cannot too strongly urge the people of this country to give full support to the state safety conferences now being organized. Support your local officials. Each of you make a personal study of your local traffic laws and motor vehicle codes. And most important, take personal stock of your own driving habits. Do these things, and results should be immediate in checking what otherwise may be the worst traffic death record for any year since the automobile came into general use. It is too soon to make accurate predictions as to what eventually will come out of the deliberations of the President's Highway Safety Conference. Everything depends upon the degree to which the general public supports the local safety programs and mends its driving habits. This means every driver in the nation. The time to get results is now. It's up to you.
Thank you, General Fleming. Here in the East, there are 7.5 hours remaining in this day, 11.5 hours out in the Pacific Coast. Now, whether you're a pedestrian or a driver, please watch out today for yourself and for others, today and each day that follows. It may be worth your life.
On the subject, The Invisible Hitchhiker, our documentary is closed.
But this is Robert St. John inviting you to listen to the National Hour again next Sunday when our subject will be Prologue, A-Day.
This has been the National Hour. From our studios in New York and Washington, and from Cleveland, Chicago, Denver, Hollywood, and San Francisco, we have brought you the 31st of the series of current affairs and national problems. Our guests were Don Seaton and Major General Philip B. Fleming. Robert St. John was your narrator, with Robert McCormick reporting from Washington. According to Webster, safety and security mean the same thing, the quality of insuring against loss or hurt. That's a good common sense definition, and a good common sense way of providing security for you and your family is to invest in United States savings bonds. United States savings bonds are backed by your government. They earn you $4 back for every $3 invested, and they make possible all those little extras, like a college education for your kids, that will brighten your future. So, play it safe. Back your future with bonds. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.